Happy, happy, happy new year! 2017 is here, and with it, new resolutions, hopes, and dreams come to life. And if reading more is one of your resolutions this year, we have a fun and delicious suggestion just for you.
And most people don't know that there was a whole nother side of Edgar Allan Poe. There was one that was strange and weird and scary, and there was another that was tender and sweet.
Being a teenager is not easy. I mean, the hormones, the pressure, the social media, the expectations. I mean, give me a break, right? Well, what if I told you there is a safe place where you can actually have a break?
I think if there's any group in our culture today who could use a little more help, it would be our adolescents. As they try to wade through the minefields of middle school and high school, it'd be great for them to have somebody walk alongside them and point out where the downfalls might come.
And as we start this new year, let's take some time to look back at history and go over some of its most memorable moments right here in Howard County.
Using our images from our collection and our newspaper collection, we were able to piece together this narrative of all of the floods that have hit Howard County and more specifically Ellicott City going back to 1786.
These stories coming up in January's episode of HOCA Journal, starting right now. Hi, and welcome to the first episode of 2017 of HOCA Journal, the show where we highlight the unique and interesting people, businesses, nonprofit organizations, and events happening right here in Howard County. I am your host, Cris Oviedo. We are starting a new year. New dreams, new hopes, new resolutions. Well, okay, I'll admit it, some are not so new and continue to make it on my list year after year after year. But, you know, one thing that should always, always, always be on our list, no matter what year it is to care for young people, those who hold the future of our nation in their hands. And that's why here in studio with me today, I have Diane Heidi. She is the area director for Howard County Young Life. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much.
I'm very excited to have you in our studio today. I was looking for guests for this month, and I had actually never heard about Young Life, and I just happened to find a link there online. So why don't we start telling people what Young Life is all about?
Young Life is an international, non-denominational ministry to adolescents. We work with students from middle school, high school, and now even we have Young Life on college campuses throughout the United States. We have been around for 75 years. We had our 75th anniversary this past year, and here in Howard County, this will be our 45th year of having Young Life. So we've been around for a while, and our hope is that we would introduce adolescents to Jesus Christ and help them grow in their faith. I think if there's any group in our culture today who could use a little more help, it would be our adolescents. As they try to wade through the minefields of middle school and high school, it'd be great for them to have somebody walk alongside them and point out where the downfalls might come. And in Young Life, our philosophy has been that if we could get some adults, young adults, to come into their life and walk alongside them, it would make life so much easier. The key to our ministry is the volunteers that we have working with us, our leaders that work with students. So they spend anywhere from 10 to 12 hours a week, and their job, if you can call being volunteering a job, their job is to go meet adolescents and help them figure out what life is all about. The founder of Young Life was a youth pastor in a church, and no kids were coming to the church. And he went to the senior pastor and said, "Where are the youth?" And the senior pastor walked him outside, pointed down the street, and said, "They're in that high school. Your job is to figure out how to get them into this church." And so Jim Rayburn, the founder, started figuring out, well, how am I going to do that? How are we going to get adolescents excited about the church? He coined a phrase saying it's a sin to bore kids with the gospel. So he tried to make reaching kids with the truth about God's love for them a fun way. So he never never met in the church. He would meet at the high school. He meet in students' homes. And even to this day, we still meet in students' homes and community buildings if we get a little too large to help adolescents have this, what we might call, we call it our Young Life Club, but it's a party with a purpose. So we get adolescents together and help them enjoy some fun that maybe they don't have when they get together with a bunch of teenagers. They don't have any pressure. They walk into a room and they feel loved and cared for. And in the midst of that atmosphere, have an opportunity to speak to them about how much God loves them.
So why don't we talk about the age groups that you guys are supporting through Young Life? And I understand it's a wide range.
Yes, it is. Well, here in Howard County, we have a wildlife club, which is our ministry for middle school students. We are at Elkridge Landing Middle School, and we've been there for almost 10 years. And it was started by, interestingly enough, some parents who were familiar with Young Life where they were in Texas, and they moved here and wanted something for their middle school student and felt like, what a rich place to try to put an influence in their life, a safe place, and some good moral values and some Christian values back into their life. And so I met with them. They had been in Young Life in high school, so they knew kind of what it was all about, and we trained some of them. And one of the leaders now is a teacher in the area, and they have gotten some high school students to kind of help them. And so they meet once a month for a large group meeting, and they have a theme. You know, they might do a Christmas club or a Thanksgiving club or something like that. They do a ministry outreach project every year, giving back to the community. They have great parent support because, you know, when you're in middle school, you don't go anywhere without your parents. So we do much more work with parents in the middle school than we might in high school, where kids seem to be a little bit more independent. We take them to a summer camp for a week every year. We have a small group Bible studies with them. They have a girls group. They have a guys group. Dudes and Donuts is their guys group. And so they'll meet twice a month with a smaller group of students and a leader and dig a little deeper into how you can survive in middle school and what does God have to say about that.
And then you guys also have a group for the high schoolers as well.
Yes. Young Life was started with high school students, and we since then have expanded up and down on the scale, but our main ministry is with high school students. So here in Howard County, we have several clubs where students gather weekly to have fun and do all the great things that we do. And we have a team of volunteer leaders that work within each of those schools. And the same thing as the middle school, we'll take a summer trip. We just did a fall trip to North Bay Adventure Camp in November. We'll go to Young Life owns 20 some camps throughout the United States. So we'll take students to one of those. Last year we went to a camp in Georgia. This year we will be going to New York. And so we have those kind of activities. We have small group Bible studies. On Friday mornings, one of our groups has a Iron Men group that meets of guys that get together to study the Bible. And then we have a girls Bible study that meets on Friday mornings at 6 also. And then there are a lot more opportunities for our leaders to be with high school students. So if you're at a school that has Young Life and there's a football game, there will be Young Life leaders in the stands sitting with students, not the adults, watching a football game. They will be showing up where you work. They'll be meeting kids before or after school for coffee at Starbucks. They will be investing their life in those students to try to help them see what life could be like if you were living for Christ. I often say that those leaders are just a few steps ahead sometimes, and they are whispering in the ear of those high school students the exact same thing their parents might be whispering. And for some reason, when you get into high school, your parents, you think, are really dumb. And they get really smart when you get out of college and you need help and you want to, you know, find out how to really pay your taxes and all those kind of things. But for a brief period, they just don't see that. And so we say to parents, hey, we're going to whisper the same things. Hey, don't do drugs. Hey, stay away from sex. Hey, don't follow the crowd in these things. And our basis for saying that is because we know God has a better plan for their life.
Talking a little just more in depth about that, you said you guys are there in the different events and different things. So how does that connection happen? So when kids come in to you guys, do you guys assign specific people to be like mentors for these other kids, or how does that work?
It's kind of organic. We have a training program that we put our volunteer leaders through, and in here in Howard County, most, I'd say half and half, half of our leaders are college students and the other half are young working adults who have maybe been in Young Life when they were in high school and worked as a volunteer leader in college, and now they've settled back, they've got a job, they maybe just got married, and they want to give back to what Young Life has given to them. So that's our core group, and so we train them in how to live a life that's above reproach. You know, we have pretty strong standards. It might be okay for you to drink if you're over 21, but we would rather you not be imbibing a lot while you're trying to teach adolescents how to say no to things. Kids look at what you do more than what you say. So that's why we want our leaders to be an open book with high school students, that they can see them, they can walk into their house anytime, and the leader isn't going to have to like suddenly change what they're doing because a high school student has shown up on the door. They are living that type of life. So we will assign a group of leaders to a particular ministry. So I work with the students at Mount Hebron and Marriott's Ridge. We have a combined club there. And there are three other people who work with me. And so our team is working in that area. You know, we're not associated with the school. We don't go into school on non-public hours, but we will show up at events. And our goal is to try to meet students. So we'll faithfully attend the field hockey games and get to know the girls on that team and talk with them about life and encourage them in their game. There's so much pressure, even on a sports team, to be perfect, to score the goal. To have a bad day is just not acceptable. And so for us to be on the sidelines cheering, maybe an away game that no one goes to but a few parents, a Young Life leader might be there taking pictures, which who doesn't want their picture, you know? So we'll do those type of things. And then as students show up to our ministry, showed up to a club or get to know one of our other students who's involved with us, then that relationship might go deeper. So it's to get to know them in the beginning, but then to develop that friendship that might change their life, that might offer them an advice. Hey, there's a minefield. Don't step right there. Step over here.
Is there a fee for kids to participate in this program?
There is not. Interestingly enough, from the history, the very beginning of Young Life, it was called the Young Life Club. It's not a club. You don't have to join. There's no dues. There's no fees. Students are allowed to come. They can come once and never come back. They can come every week. They can take part in anything that we do without money being attached to it.
And then how do kids apply, or what's the process in order for them to get involved?
At most of our schools, we do a pretty big social media campaign every week of where we're going to meet. We meet in high school students' homes. So it's much easier to say, hey, come to Lexi's house. Lexi says, hey, why don't you come? We're having this thing called Young Life at my house. I can't explain it. You just got to come and experience it. And that's usually our standard line to students who are inviting students to come to something. And they'll just show up at that club and they'll come downstairs, there'll be music playing, there'll be a lot of kids acting, you know, crazy and having fun. And they're like, wow, these people are having a lot of fun and no one's drunk. There's not any pressure to be anything. You know, we call it sometimes a party with a purpose because it has that party atmosphere. So any student is allowed to come, and we do a really great job of greeting those students and making them feel cared for. When you walk into a party on a Friday night and you get to the bottom of the steps, your first thought is, who's here? And your second thought is, will anyone notice me? When you walk down the steps of a Young Life club in this area, when you get to the bottom of the steps, somebody greets you. And someone says, hey, I don't know you. What's your name? And some of our older students, our seniors and upperclassmen, really take on this idea of greeting and making people feel welcomed. We want them to feel like they've walked into something that they've always been a part of and not something they've never seen.
Now, the kids have to be enrolled. For instance, I know that there's a few private schools around the area. Are you guys working with private school kids, or do kids have to be in the public school system, or how does that work?
We tend to be geographically based as opposed to school based. And okay. So there are students that maybe go to a Cardinal Gibbonson are coming back for. There might be kids at Glen Elg Country Day who get involved because they know someone. In Howard County, one of the things we noticed is that everyone plays who plays a sport knows everyone. And so sometimes even the geography doesn't work. There might be students from Athelton who are really good friends with a student from River Hill, and they're like, I'm going to go hang out with those students. And so we try to be geographical for the sake of our volunteer leaders so they don't have to be trying to be at 10 different football games, just a couple.
So if somebody wants to, somebody's listening to the show and they're like, I might want to try that out. They're in high school. What's the best way for them to contact you guys if they want to express interest? And they're like, I know you already said that whenever you guys have these meetings, but if they're not in the school, if they're in private school and they don't know anyone who's in that group, how can they connect?
Okay, we have Facebook pages for all of our clubs so that you can go to Facebook and you can look up, you know, Young Life River Hill, and it will be posted in there where the club's going to be. All of our schools have a Instagram account, so you can follow along with that. Howard County has an Instagram account, so you can follow along with that. And we also have a web page that you can go to that lists the names of the leaders who are in charge. So if you needed to contact one of them, you could give them a call.
And now for our students here at Howard Community College, if somebody's listening and they're like, that sounds something like I would like to get involved with, what opportunities are available to them?
We would love students from HCC to get involved. We actually have two right now who are going through leader training, who were in Young Life in high school and are now here. And one of the great things about HCC is it's a great college. So a lot of students who aren't sure where they want to go end up coming here. And for 2 years, they can give their life away to high school or middle school students. And we love that. So they would just need to go to the Young Life webpage at howardcounty.younglife.org. Contact information and an email will show up in my box saying, hey, I'm so-and-so and I'd be interested in volunteering. And so we would love to train you, give you an opportunity, send you out to a field of a school and try to make a difference.
And I know we haven't really talked about many of the different programs that you guys offer. We talked about Party with a Purpose, but I found that you guys also have other events called Caring for Kids, The Best Week of Their Life, which is the camp, which we kind of talked about. There's one called A Time to Question, Learn, and Grow. And I know we've kind of briefly talked about them, but is there any other one that you would like to really put out there other than A Party with a Purpose, which sounds like a lot of fun, really?
For every school, we also have what we call campaigners. And that is a ministry that's on another night of the week for students who are interested in finding out a little bit more about a relationship with Christ. It's more of a Bible study, more in-depth. At club, at the end of every night, a leader stands up and shares a story about themselves and a story about Christ and how students can relate to God today. But in our campaigner meeting, it's more of a small group Bible study. So students can come with questions about what they've heard. They can find out what it's like to study the Bible or how to pray or any of those type of things or how to make a difference. One of the things we really work hard on is helping students think outside of themselves and figure out how to give away what they already have, whether that be helping out with a mission, a helping up mission, or donating. You know, Mount Hebron does a great food drive, and we try to get our students to get involved in that because it's a great way to give back instead of being so selfish. The other thing we offer to our high school students is an opportunity to help out with our Capernaum ministry, which is our ministry to disadvantaged students here in Howard County. We have a club that meets twice a month, and we have about 20 or so students who are involved in it. And we are always looking for high school students to come and be similar to the Best Buddies program at the high school to help those students have a great time. So we'll serve pizza and we'll have a club and we'll do things appropriate to their disabilities, whether it be physical or mental, and love having our high school students come alongside them and partner with them for that night. So another opportunity for students to be able to give back.
And do you guys have any programs right now for elementary school kids?
We do not. We do have, not here in this area, but we're hoping to start one soon, a Young Lives program, which is for teens with babies. And so we have explored some of that. I've met with the folks at Wild Lake that have a really successful program there. And we are working to raise some money and get some volunteers together to be able to have a ministry like that to teen moms and dads to help them figure out how to navigate through that hard, hard world. Howard County doesn't have a lot, but there are more opportunities for us to get involved in the, while I'm pregnant, what do I do now? We'd love to help partner with them to walk through some of that and then to give them the opportunities that maybe they miss out on because they have a child. And so Young Lives is something we'd like to get started. But we do not have anything for elementary school students.
Now, we as parents, I'm listening and I'm talking to you and I'm like, this is a great program. I'd love for my kids to get involved. But should this come from the kids? Should the kids be the ones who approach this? Or do you suggest that parents and adults, you know, kind of like give them a little push to go and start getting connected with you guys?
It could go bad either way. It could go bad if you want them to go and they're like, my mom's making me go to this. I don't want to go. It could go bad if they want to go to it, but they don't ever pursue it. Because, you know, it is hard. I always say to our high school friends, it's hard to not feel like you're invited to the party. And you can't just randomly talk to every person in the school. But I say to them all the time, there's someone sitting alone in the lunchroom who just wants a friend. And that's what Young Life wants to be, is a friend to them. There's, you know, you ask these five people to come to club this week, but the sixth person you don't know so well, so you don't ask. And that might be the one person that's looking for somebody to care for them. We don't want to be the Mean Girls movie of like, you can't sit at this table. We want to be the table that says anyone can sit here. So lots of times for me, parents will investigate Young Life, will send an email to me and say, who are the leaders, whatever. And then my job usually is to try to figure out, who do we know that knows them? So I will give them a list of students who are very involved from their high school and say, do they know any of these people? Because if they know one of them, I can get that person to invite them to come to a Young Life Club. And an invitation, I think, is key to making them feel a part of it.
Absolutely. So, you know, just keep that in mind if you guys are listening and either you are listening and you're like, I want to be involved with this, but nobody has invited me, like you were just saying, or maybe you're a parent and you're saying, you know, I'd love for my child to be part of this, but I don't want to just push this onto my child. So here's the solution. Contact Diane, find out who is already involved with this wonderful program in the school that your child or that you belong to, and you will be invited. This is an open invitation for everybody to participate and be part of Howard County Young Life. Diane, is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you want our listeners to know before we wrap our conversation today?
I would just be very selfish and give one final plug as the year end comes up. We are funded by the community. There's no Young Life pot of money that comes into this area. All the money in this area is raised by myself and the adult committee that works with me. So churches and organizations and foundations, businesses, parents, they're the ones that raise the money for what we're doing. So I would be amiss if I did not say we are always looking to meet our budget.
So there's another opportunity, not just to get involved, but to actually help out and continue to grow and continue to make this wonderful organization stay alive and help our young life here in Howard County. Diane, thank you so much for taking the time and coming into our studio today.
Thank you very much.
And for HOKA Journal, I'm Chris Oviedo, and we'll be right back.
Major key alert. Don't ever play yourself. Life is like school. You will be tested. So pass it.
Learn the real major keys to getting to college at GetSchooled.com.
Stay focused. Now that's a major key alert.
Brought to you by Get Schooled and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Howard County Journal. Matt Trudell here. And with me today from the Elkridge Furnace Inn are the owners of the Elkridge Furnace Inn. We have Donna and Dan Wecker. Thank you guys for joining me today.
You're welcome.
So tell us a little bit about yourselves and how you guys got involved in, I guess, the restaurant world.
I started in the restaurant business when I was 14. My sister got me a job at the Columbia Ice Rink at the concession stand there. And I've been in restaurant work ever since. I've moved up from the concession stand at the ice rink. And now we have a French-inspired restaurant in Elkridge that we also do quite a bit of catering out of as well.
So you guys are both from Columbia?
My husband is originally from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, but I've been in Howard County since I was 2 years old.
Okay. Yeah. And what brought you out here?
Well, I came along with my parents and family when they moved here in 1970. So okay. I've been in Howard County a long time.
All right. Being here for a long time, do you think it helps you in owning a business in Howard County? Like knowing the community, knowing the people, what they're looking for?
I think it does in many ways. We have been a part of the community and active and involved in many different aspects of the community, socially through churches as well as civic things that we've done, organizations like the Scouts and other things like that, as well as running our business. We've been in business there for about 29 years.
Wow.
So we know a lot of people in the community, have been involved with a lot of the people in the community, and have adapted many aspects of our business as a result of those relationships.
And you said you guys, what kind of food do you guys predominantly serve? French?
Well, we're French styled. We call it Francophile.
Okay.
Everywhere the French have been conquered, colonized, had a major influence, as well as classic and provincial French, which covers an awful lot of parts in the world.
Yeah.
The French have a very interesting and dynamic culture. And that's the roots of our food, but we're serving people from everywhere.
Wow, so you guys have owned it for 29 years.
Yes.
How did you go about getting it? Because it's such a historic site. Like, how were you able to purchase it and then now make it?
Our landlord is the Department of Natural Resources, okay. who saved the house from near demolition when it was bought by the Department of Transportation. And then actually Dan's brother Steve had seen the property and knew we wanted to get back into the restaurant business. And they decided to put a bid on doing a business there, and we're the only public-private venture of its sort in the state of Maryland.
Wow.
So we don't own the property. We have paid for the restoration.
Okay.
We don't get paid to do that, but we get some rent credit for some of what we do.
Okay.
Basically, nobody else wanted to do it, and we were naive enough at the time to say we would.
Many years of sweat equity and reinvesting and reinvesting. So we basically started us by selling our house, and the rest is history.
But that's got to be awesome, being the executive chef of your own restaurant. It's not like working for someone else necessarily. It's like you decide the menus and all that, right?
Yes, I work with my kitchen staff to do that, but I love what I do, or I wouldn't still be doing it. We have over an acre of gardens at the restaurant. We have two greenhouses. We do things micro-seasonally, and I am very happy with what I do and what we've become at the Elk Ridge Furnace Inn and all the people that we've been able to serve over the years.
Okay. So in late January, I think it's January 20th, you have the Edgar Allan Poe Literary Dinner. Can you tell us a little bit about that and kind of what people can expect?
Well, my wife and I, as well as many of the members of my family, are avid readers. We are big advocates of reading. I don't care whether you do it out of a notebook, online, or out of a hardcover book. But we love reading, and we believe that reading is a basic element of our education for us and for our children, our grandchildren, and those beyond. So we have sponsored a number of programs relating to literature over the years, for many, many years. I have a series that I called Sunday Supper, a history series. Sunday was the only day that most people throughout centuries worked 5.5 days a week. And Sunday was the only day you could go and visit. And so we would do a lecture series with a themed meal based on a speaker or a book from literature for that. We have also done a number of literary teas and literary dinners. We have one coming up in February, Anne of Green Gables, that we're donating 100% of the proceeds to a reading program that we're co-sponsoring with the Elk Ridge Rotary Club.
Wow.
In order to fund a reading program at the new Elk Ridge Library when it's finished. But this is the Edgar Allan Poe is just another one in a series of literary dinners that we've done where the public comes in and we'll do readings between each flight, and we're going to do 6 flights of food, and there'll be a reading between each flight. Now, most people know of Edgar Allan Poe from his Macabre. They know of the Telltale Height and the Telltale Heart and things like that. But he wrote beautiful poetry, and most people don't know that there was a whole nother side of Edgar Allan Poe. There was one that was strange and weird and scary, and there was another that was tender and sweet. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to mix it up with the two of those, and we're going to do food from each of the 6 cities that he lived in. So we'll do food from Richmond, New York, Baltimore, Philadelphia, Boston, and London. Those are the 6 cities that he lived in, and we'll have readings between all of those courses to represent his works.
Now, our daughter, who was our pastry chef, our executive pastry chef, also is a great reader, and she is the inspiration behind a lot of the themes that we choose. So she loves Edgar Allan Poe, so I think she was one of the instigators behind this particular dinner. Okay. Of course, Dan did the food end, but we're looking forward to it.
How do you go about deciding what food you're going to pair with it?
We do a little research. It's not hard to do research on particular cities, but we try to do something that's thematic that people would think of for that particular city. Mm-hmm. For instance, for Richmond, we are going to do a house smoked and cured ham, and we're going to do that on a crostini, and we're going to do that with a little bit of cheddar and garlic aioli. That'll be kind of the amuse-bouche to start things off. So when we think of Virginia, we think of Virginia ham. Mm-hmm. And it's not a stretch.
Yeah.
Some things are easier than others. We have a program called our Gourmand Club, and we do dinners with a group, and we go travel vicariously to somewhere in the world, either in France or, again, somewhere the French have been invested in French culture, and we do dinners with those. We also research those to do little micro dinners of French culture, wine, and food. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so we do our homework and try to come up with things.
The recent Little Women tea that we did and the previous Anne of Green Gables tea, they're actually cookbooks, you know, for some of those books.
Yeah.
So we can get hold of those cookbooks and, you know, kind of get inspired as well from recipes that other people have pulled out of the literature itself.
Well, I'm a big reader, and I mean, most people my age aren't big readers, so I like the fact that there's people out there that still stress, you know, how important it is to read, even if it is, you know, a magazine. I personally don't read magazines, but I mean, getting out there and reading is important.
Yeah. Well, I know as a mother, I really enjoyed reading out loud to my children.
Yeah.
When I studied French myself, I often read to myself out loud as a way of, you know, getting a feel for the language. And so, again, I've been one of the readers for some of the events that we've done. Plus, just live entertainment, again, is kind of a lost art a little bit. We're so used to our televisions and our canned stuff.
Yeah.
So just to come out and to hear someone watch their expression and become a part of that event is gratifying.
How often do you guys do events like these?
As often as we can put them together.
Okay.
Yeah, usually monthly, some sort of.
We do some sort of event. A literary event is probably maybe 4 or 5 a year, different style, maybe 6 of those that we do. But we try to do different things to keep our community engaged.
Mm-hmm.
By doing the fundraiser for the library with the local Rotary Club. We've done a number of dinners. We did a little House on the Prairie dinner that was just a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Because people remember, they remember the TV show, they remember the books, and they remember the characters. And when they're read to you, they come back to life in a way that you remember them. And it takes you back to happy times.
Yeah, everybody loves the trip down memory lane.
Yes.
So the Edgar Allan Poe literary dinner, what time is that one?
I've got my sheet in front of me here. It is 6:30 p.m. on Friday, January the 20th.
Which happens to be my birthday as well, so fun.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice that it lands on a Friday. So you said you do some teas as well. Mm-hmm. What are involved with those? Is it very similar, or is it just...
Of course, the food is different.
Yes.
And usually we do them during the day, so the atmosphere is a little different. Of course, we're in a beautiful 1810 manor home. The rooms that we use right now are awesome because there's a fireplace and a lot of light that comes through the wind, the very tall windows. It's a very elegant environment. And then we have, again, many different courses in a tea. And so it lends itself well to doing those literary, you know, little tastes in between the courses as well.
So for someone who hasn't been to the Elkridge Furnace Inn yet, can you kind of explain what they can expect walking in the door and how it's going to go from there on out?
Yeah. Well, as soon as you arrive and park in the parking lot and then go down our historic brick winding walkway towards this monumental brick structure with the big porches and the very blue paint under the porches, which is, again, an historic color, you just know that something special is happening, that we have a lot of trees even that are hundreds of years old on the property. And, yeah, it's very majestic. Even before you get into the house. Yeah. And so, and then beyond the house, we have, again, our beautiful gardens. But once they get in, again, it's elegance that is very comfortable. It's not pretentious. It makes you feel like you're home. And again, we have clients that have become like family to us. And that's a really nice feeling as well.
How can people find out more about the restaurant itself, the events, all of that? Do you guys have a website?
We do, ElkridgeFurnaceInn.com. Okay. And of course, we do have our Facebook page,
yes,
which I, Dan, I'm the one trying to get up some of these special events. Yeah, and I think maybe that's how you found us. I'm not sure. I have an Instagram as well. Yeah.
I think I found you guys on Totally Hoco.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there's a couple different sites that we kind of go to try and find, and Totally Hoco tends to be one of the better ones. I saw that, but then I found the Facebook page and your website and kind of tracked you down that way.
So, yeah, we are trying to use social media. Again, yes, it's always a challenge to, you know, keep up with it all with a busy business. And telephone's ringing a lot when you're in the office to get everything done. But, you know, it's a great way, too, because then, again, I'm finding people who we've been in Coward County now, 29 years? And there's still people who don't know that we're down hidden in this very far corner. It's really the northeasternmost corner in Howard County, right on the Patapsco River. But the history is deep and interesting. Yeah. And, it's a beautiful spot.
Well, I when I was in high school, I did the Tech Magnet program through Long Reach. And I did the hotel, restaurant, and tourism. I used to want to be a chef, actually. And now I'm a radio person. But I love cooking. Cooking for a lot of people, I found out. I was happy that in high school was able to find out that I didn't want to cook for like 100 people a day, you know. But that's actually where I originally heard about you guys, because we did in hotel, restaurant, tourism, there were internships. And right. I remember I ended up at the Columbia Sheraton, but I think one of my classmates might have ended up with
Dan
you guys.
Has done worked with the program, different programs in the county.
Well, that's nice also. It's nice that you guys give an opportunity for someone that's looking into that to kind of...
Yeah, from the elementary school, we do this Days of Taste, where my husband goes. It's been a couple different elementary schools, but they talk about Thunderhill.
Six or seven different elementary schools. And I go in and we talk about elements of taste, and there's scientific end of it as well as the fun end of it. But then I work with them two different days. On the first day, it's just very elemental things, the taste of sweet, sour, salt, and bitter. And we do that with grapes, feta cheese, arugula, and lemons. But then on day three, I teach them how to make vinaigrettes. Okay. And I have garden greens from our gardens, freshly cut, and then maybe a dozen different salad ingredients for them to put together and make their own salads, utilizing those four elements of taste. And it's a lot of fun. And I work with between 80 and 110 kids on any given day when I do that.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. So, and then again, with the high schools and as well, you've had to...
I work with Elkridge Landing Middle School. I go there periodically to do a presentation on in their kind of their home ec department. But do a cooking demonstration, but then talk about a career in food service.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the high school level, I take interns. I do tours with the ARL as well as some of the culinary programs. They come and do a day with me at the Furnace Inn, touring the gardens, doing demonstrations and doing a luncheon. And I've done that with a number of different groups in the county.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's all. It sounds like you guys do a lot for the community. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that that gets paid back with, you know, people seeing you guys out and about and say, you know, let's support our local.
Well, we hope so.
Yeah. Well, I thank you guys for coming in today. Are you guys open every day?
Closed on Mondays, except for occasional special things. Okay. But gives us a chance. Again, we're in an old house. Again, the older portion, 1744. There's always projects, things to fix up.
Oh, yeah.
We are just finishing expanding to our new garden house, which is just adjacent. It's a property just adjacent, 1830s house. We lived in for 12 years when our kids were young. Okay. And now we've converted that also to commercial use. So we got lots going on, and yeah.
Sounds pretty
busy. Never a dull moment,
all
for
right.
sure.
Well, thank you guys for joining me today. Definitely make sure to go out and on January 20th to the Elkridge Furnace Inn at 6:30 for the Edgar Allan Poe Literary Dinner.
And please also call in advance for reservations. Yes. Because yes, it does fill up.
So they should reserve. Yeah,
as
that
soon
makes
as
sense.
Possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So reserve your spot for that. But if not, definitely go to the website, which is ElkridgeFurnaceInn.com.
Yes.
And check out the other events, or just set up a reservation to go try some great food in Howard County. Thank you guys for joining me.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
When it comes to parenting, there are no perfect answers. But that's okay, because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on adoption, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
For HOCO Journal, I'm Alex Baker. If you remember a while back last year, I interviewed Sean Gladden, the executive director of the Howard County Historical Society. This month he is back on the show and ready to recap the year of 2016 for Howard County and look ahead as to what's to come next year. Mr. Gladden, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So just for people who maybe not have heard our little interview last year, tell us a little bit about what the Howard County Historical Society is.
Yes, we are the primary repository for Howard County's history regarding artifacts, documents, things of enduring historical value. We have been around since 1958. We were founded by Alda Hopkins Clark, who was the wife of Judge Clark, Jim Clark Sr., whose son, James Clark Jr., was senator here. And the Clark family is famously known for founding Clarksville. And the Clark family are integral parts of what we do at the Historical Society. They serve on our board. They provide us with influence and funding. So we pretty much the county's main historical repository.
And so tell us about some of the things you do as executive director, because I imagine that must be a lot of duties.
Yeah, as I said last year when we did this interview, I wear a lot of different hats. I think when I first took the job, I was excited to get the opportunity to work at the museum and develop engaging historical exhibits for visitors. And whereas I do get to do that, most of my time is spent raising money, paying the bills, basically running an organization. So in addition to being the chief curator of the museum and the chief collections manager for the archives and for the artifacts, I also am, in charge of the public relations, marketing for the organization, wow, for grant writing, for establishing connections with local politicians to help with Howard County government. What they provide for the Historical Society. I also do lectures. And then on top of all that, I teach here at Howard Community College. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very busy, but very fulfilling.
So are you associated with any, I know there's a lot of historical attractions around, mm-hmm, Howard County. So mm-hmm, are they part of the Historical Society?
We have currently two, I would say we have three facilities that are under our purveyance. We have the archives, which is the second floor of the Miller Branch Library. But our two historic properties would be the museum, which is the First Presbyterian Church of Howard County. It was originally built in 1894. And then right next to it, we have a building that was the second Quaker schoolhouse.
Oh.
That we are actually, I guess this leads into what we're doing in 2017, we want to restore that to an old Quaker schoolhouse and open an education exhibit. But those are the properties that we're in charge of, but we partner with Howard County Recreation and Parks, who have, you know, such sites as Belmont. Mm-hmm. We partner with Historic Ellicott City, which is housed in Historic Mount Ida. Hmm. We also partner with Patapsco Female Institute and, you know, Bowman Bridge. And so whereas we're not in charge of these sites, we do partner with the organizations that are in charge of these sites. So, yes.
So you actually talked a little bit about the museum already. So tell us, for people who go there, like, what can they find? Because you have a lot of exhibits, but I know you rotate them year round.
Yeah. what we actually just opened an exhibit on the flood. We actually were working on a flood exhibit prior to the July 30th flood. It was a project that we worked with an intern who decided, he looked at our list of exhibits that we wanted to do over the next couple of years, and he picked out the flood exhibit. And we, using our images from our collection and our newspaper collection, we were able to piece together this narrative of all of the floods that have hit Howard County and more specifically Ellicott City, going back to 1786. And then we had this exhibit all ready to go on July 28th. And then we sent it off to our graphic designer to be printed. And then on July 30th, the next flood hit. So I called our graphic designer and said, stop, send back the material. I'm going to add this new exhibit. We were able to collect a few images and artifacts from this latest event, and then we updated the exhibit to include 2016, and we opened it about a month ago, and that's now a permanent exhibit at the at the museum. We will also be opening a new exhibit in December on the first Jewish settlement in Howard County called Yazor. And we will also be looking at the influence of Jewish merchants in Howard County. That will be opening on December the 18th, and we will actually be having a Hanukkah celebration to go along with that. And as we look towards 2017, in addition to all the other exhibits that we have highlighting our collection of artifacts from Howard County's past, we are working with the Columbia Archives on a history of Columbia. Hmm. This will be the 50th anniversary of the founding of Columbia, 2017 will be. And to go along with that, we're also doing an exhibit on the 50th anniversary of Meriwether Post Pavilion. So we're going
cool.
Kind of looking at all the different acts that have come through Meriwether. So we're anticipating those two exhibits being very popular as we move forward. And we're also going to be upgrading and updating our Civil War exhibit in 2017 as well.
Okay. And you talked a little bit already, but tell us a bit more what people can do and find at the Archive and Research Library.
Sure. We have documents. We have records. We have various certificates, whether it be marriage certificates, birth certificates. Some of our records date back to the 1600s. We've got a few land grants that were the original copies of the land grants granted by Lord Baltimore to some of the early settlers of what was Anne Arundel County.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't become Howard County till 1851. And so you name it, we've got land grants, deeds and mortgages. We've got court cases, indictments. We've got manumission records, fugitive slave records. We have voter registration records. Hmm. We have marriage licenses. The marriage license collection is probably one of the more interesting collections we have. Sometime back in the 1980s, the county had was going through its records retention schedule and were removing some older records. And they took these marriage licenses and they had thrown them in the garbage. And the story goes is that the president of our board at the time, Phil Stackhouse, actually went into the garbage and retrieved all of these records and brought them to the Historical Society. Now, the story behind it is Ellicott City was a site along with Elkton, where you did not need the standard 2-week waiting period in order to get married. So if you wanted to get like a quick wedding,
like a Vegas style wedding,
you would come to Ellicott City. And it was this way between like 1880 and up till World War II. So we have all of those records.
Are there any like books or like videos you could find on like say YouTube about the history of Howard County that maybe even done by the Historical Society that you would recommend?
You know, we don't have one. We would like to. As a matter of fact, I would love to speak to Howard Community College about doing something in the future. But what we do have in the collection is are a series of vignettes that Howard Community College produced back in the 1980s and the 1990s called Pages from the Past.
Hmm.
We do have a complete collection of those, and they're short little 3-minute clips of various aspects of Howard County history. We are in the process of uploading those to our YouTube channel. So okay. If anyone goes to YouTube and looks for Howard County Historical Society, we have a few videos that have been uploaded. But we are, I think 2017, we'd like to add more, do some more kind of interactive, videos, oral histories, and get those up on YouTube for sure.
So actually, you're talking about years. That also helps leads into my next question. So before we get into 2017, let's do a bit of a recap in 2016, because unfortunately, this airs will be January, so we'll just miss the holidays.
Gotcha.
But so if you want to lead off, tell us what you did during either Thanksgiving, Christmas, or Halloween.
Well, we always tend to try and do events that coincide with whatever's going on in Ellicott City so that we can draw folks up. And obviously we were kind of captivated by the post flood restoration of Ellicott City, whereas we were not affected at all by the flood. Many of our partners down on Main Street were, and without the draw of Main Street, it's really tough to draw visitors into the museum. So we tried to do some programming. You know, we have a very, very popular lecture series that is the first Friday of every month. It's a kind of a lunch lecture series. Mm-hmm. It's really geared towards, senior citizens, retirees, folks who don't work on Fridays, maybe students who can come and, you bring a lunch and you hear a talk on some aspect of local history. And then afterwards, we provide water and like a dessert. Yeah, okay. And then afterwards, we give a tour of the museum. So those became very, very popular. The last one that we did was actually last Friday on the history of the Enchanted Forest. And we had a packed crowd. We had like 65 people come to the museum for that. So, whereas old Ellicott City, historic Main Street Ellicott City was recovering. We were still trying to bring folks to Ellicott City through our programming. So we were continuing to do, our lectures or concerts. But it was, it was tough. We did, Ellicott City did a haunted house this year for Halloween. We did not participate in that, but we were trying to get folks from the haunted house to maybe come into the museum. In a way, the museum kind of is its own haunted house. There have been plenty of ghost stories and paranormal investigations through the museum. For the most part, between November and December, we participated in all of the reopening festivities for Ellicott City, try and help it recover, bring folks back, and rebuild and get EC strong again.
And so now we looked at 2016. So tell us what you got coming up for the year of 2017.
Well, we're going to continue our programming, which will be, concerts at the museum, lectures. We're going to try a few new programs this year. We do a program called PS I Love You, which is it's a program where we have living historian actors will read love letters from historic figures who are associated with
cool.
Howard County. Yeah. It's a neat little thing. We do it around, around Valentine's Day as a little program.
Yeah, that works.
It's a nice couples program. Like I said, we are opening the new Jewish exhibit. We plan on upgrading our Civil War exhibit. We do plan in 2017 of investing a lot of time and money into restoring our Quaker schoolhouse. which once that is open, that will be open to the public as an education center, a place where you can bring small groups who can do, you know, historic living history type activities like, you know, quilt making and, you know, can learn what it was like to live in a mill town. And, you know, it's geared more towards younger students, but it'll also, the education center will also be open as an example of what a Quaker schoolhouse looked like. So we'll be doing that in 2017. We tend to do two very popular fundraisers. One is our holiday house tour, which we always do in December. That usually brings in about 300 folks who all on nice big air buses. We go around to five historic houses and visit them in Howard County. So we'll definitely do that again. This will be our 41st year doing that that event.
I understand there's a lot of ways people can contribute to the society, yes, such as being volunteers. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to build our membership. Currently, we're sitting around 500 members. And in a county like Howard County, we should probably have more than 500 members. And membership is probably the best way to support. You know, it's obviously a tax-deductible donation, $35 or $50. $50 is a family membership. And we try and give back benefits. So if you're a member of the Historical Society, you get free research at our research library. You get free access to the concerts, free tickets to the lectures. There's a lot of freebies that we give. Mm-hmm. And if you're into history, it's a great investment, not only in our organization, but then in some programming that you and your family can enjoy. We do also look for sponsorships. We like to try and reward our sponsors. Sponsorship levels are anywhere from $100 and up, and we try and reward our sponsors with, you know, some shout outs, if you will, on social media, in email, and also allowing our sponsors to be present at some of our events.
Okay, so we're getting close to the end of my questions here. Is there anything I forgot to bring up or talk about that you want to bring up now?
No, I think, you know, one of the things that we do at the Historical Society is we try to stress the importance and the historical significance of this county that we live in. And we're coming up on some pretty interesting and historically significant times, especially with the election and everyone's kind of, I guess you could say everyone's
a little bit crazy.
Yeah, things are a little crazy right now. But, you know, now's the time to kind of celebrate your local history. And Howard County's played a very important role in the development of America as an industrial power. We will actually be publishing a book in 2017, which will kind of rethink the birth of the Industrial Revolution in America. Many historians, you open up any history book, it'll tell you that the Industrial Revolution began in the textile mills of New England, more specifically right around Rhode Island with the Samuel Slater factory. Well, the book that we're having published by Hal Sharp, this is the second edition of a book that he published in 2000. This new book will make the case that the Industrial Revolution really began here in Ellicott City, that the mills that the Ellicott brothers really began were really kind of the first real factory setting, and that's 20 years before the textile mills in Rhode Island. So we're very excited about that book and hope that that book will start a dialogue amongst historians that, you know, to rethink this the beginning of America's Industrial Revolution, but also stressing the importance of Ellicott City as not just a very important historic town with regards to Maryland and Howard County, but from a national standpoint, it really is, we think, the cradle of the Industrial Revolution. So we'll be doing that as well.
Okay. And so the last question I'll just ask is, where can listeners go to learn more about Howard County?
Sure. Our website, www.hchsmd.org. And from there are links to what we do, how to join as a member, some historic research. There's some databases that you can link to off of our website. And if you are social media inclined, we have a Facebook page, a Twitter page, and an Instagram page. So please like us, friend us, tweet us.
Mr. Gladden, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
And that's it for our show today. Thanks to Alex, Matt, and all of our guests this month, not only for taking the time to speak with us, but also for all that you do to make our community a better place. Sincerely, thank you. I also want to thank you for listening to our show and for staying connected with us through social media, our website, and our podcast page. If you'd like to share your story, contact me at moviedo@howardcc.edu, or you can connect with me via Facebook at our page Dragon Digital Radio or on my personal page, Cris Oviedo. I wish you a happy, prosperous, healthy 2017, filled with laughter, love, and blessings. Until next month, I am Cris Oviedo.